From NPR News, this is News and Notes. I'm Ed Gordon. Vice President Dick Cheney's top advisor, Louis Libby, has resigned. This comes after Patrick Fitzgerald's office indicted Libby on counts of obstruction of justice, perjury, and making false statements. Joining me now to talk about these developments is NPR White House correspondent Don Gagne. Don, no surprise here in the indictment to a real degree. We should note that Mr. Libby handed in his resignation letter this morning.
Exactly. And while we have been kind of wondering and speculating for weeks, months even, over what Patrick Fitzgerald was looking into, what he might end up doing, this is certainly within the realm of things that we considered. It is not a charge of a crime relating to the original reason for this investigation. He is not charging anyone with illegally leaking Valerie Plame's name to the press. He is charging Louis Scooter Libby with obstructing and lying to reporters and lying to the grand jury and to investigators. And very serious offenses.
We should note, and most importantly here, Don, this does not close the case and the problems and the issues for the White House by any means, particularly when you talk about Mr. Libby's proximity to the higher hands, if you will.
Exactly. He is one of a handful of key, very important top aides within this White House. Vice President Cheney is often described accurately as the most powerful vice president ever. He is his top aide and his national security advisor. And as such, he has been in on so many discussions, so many decisions relating to the run-up to the Iraq war, how the war has been prosecuted, all of that. So this is a top official. A trial is coming, which is going to keep this alive. And even though Karl Rove, the president's top political advisor, was not indicted today as was considered possible, he has been told that he remains under investigation. So a cloud there as well.
Don, is it hard to believe when we talk about Rove, when we talk about Libby, and we know the proximity to Cheney and the president, is it hard to believe that some of these things were not talked about at some point in time?
What? We don't know. We don't know. But you have to have a sense that if they were talking to reporters about these things, we have heard about emails Karl Rove has sent to Stephen Hadley, who's currently the National Security Advisor. You have to believe that the special prosecutor is looking at other conversations that may have taken place.
All right, Don Gagne, NPR White House correspondent with the latest. Thanks so very much for joining us.
It's a pleasure.
And this is not the only problem the White House is dealing with. Yesterday, White House counsel Harriet Myers officially withdrew her nomination to the Supreme Court. The Senate requested documents she authored while advising the president. Myers said she stepped aside to protect the president's right to privacy. But some observers believe otherwise. Her nomination had been under intense scrutiny from Republicans and Democrats. Joining us now for more on the legal and political implications of Myers' withdrawal are Charles Ogletree, professor at Harvard Law School, and Terry Neal, chief political correspondent for WashingtonPost.com. They join us from our nation's capital here, Washington, D.C. Professor Ogletree, let me start with you. While we allow people to save face politically, if you will, how much do you buy of what Harriet Meyer said, that she stepped aside to protect the president's right to private counsel?
That has nothing to do with it. This is clearly a response to the assault on Harriet Myers by the conservative Republicans and other conservative religious groups. It is a major defeat for President Bush. And in many respects, it's a defeat for the Democrats. I think Harriet Myers, I like her. She's conservative. She's a real lawyer. I think that the Democrats may now rule the day that they didn't try to stand up for this diverse candidate with a variety of qualifications. And the president will come back, I think, with a vengeance. And we'll see someone much more conservative, probably much more prepared, and much more confirmable by a conservative Senate.
Terry Neal, Charles Ogletree brings up an interesting point, and that's the fact that I didn't hear many Democrats outside of the first day talk about the idea that this is not a bad pick.
Harriet Myers' biggest problem is that no one really knew where she stood on the issue. She was a question mark. So she had no natural base of support from any quarter among conservatives, among moderates, among liberals. The bottom line, though, is that what's going to happen is the next nominee will be much more clear where he or she stands and we'll go back to more of the sort of typical paradigm of fighting between left and right that we typically see here in Washington.
Charles, well, while there was no legal paper trail like there was for Roberts and other nominees, there was some forecasting that in certain areas she might be seen, might I stress, as moderate.
Exactly. I've talked to a number of people in Texas, former students, other colleagues, about her role as a lawyer. Harriet Myers on issues of race and justice, that she was a moderate, that even though she expressed strong views about the woman's right to choose, that she was open to different points of view. And I think what she was she was a David Souter, an unknown, unpredictable, stealth candidate. And look what happened with David Souter. To the extent that we've had candidates that we've known little about, they've turned out to be more moderate than conservative. So I think the fact that the Democrats didn't know enough, to me, was a lot, given that this president had a long list of much more conservative candidates to choose from. And you know what? Gender, a non-judge, all those factors that were relevant 3 weeks ago will go out the window. And I wouldn't be surprised to see a white male conservative probably sitting on the court not too far from where we are here in Washington today, and someone who will be easily confirmable by Senate Republican majority.
Terry Neal, here's the interesting aspect for me in all of this, and that is I am not hearing enough of reporting from the media with the idea of the real strength of the minority within the minority, and that, in fact, is this evangelical right-wing faction of the Republican Party that seems to be driving, quite frankly, the president's movements, certainly as relates to this nomination.
I think it's fairly clear. Most people understand what's happening. If you look at Washington Post and WashingtonPost.com today, there's several stories about the power of the punditocracy, which is linked to a lot of the evangelical right. But I would say this. I mean, in response sort of what Professor Ogletree was saying about believing that she's a moderate, there's two things that conservatives care about. When Bush ran in 2000, I covered the Bush campaign for the Post in 2000, there were tax cuts, number one, and there were, number two, they were changing the courts. I think, and this is speculation because we don't know what happened between President Bush and Harriet Myers in their private conversations, but I think he knows her very well. And I think he has a pretty strong idea what sort of justice he would be. The problem with him is that he has no reservoir of goodwill, in part because of David Souter and what his father did in putting David Souter on the bench. But George W. Bush knows Harriet Myers much better than his father knew David Souter. His father didn't know David Souter at all. I think that in a lot of ways, she was a stealth candidate, that she would have been very conservative. George W. Bush did that, but he couldn't convince his own people of that. With his diminishing poll ratings, questions about his leadership and character made even his own people question his judgment.
Charles, let me take you back to what I suggested there to Terry. I think there is a surface understanding and a surface reporting of the evangelical right, but I'm not still sure whether or not people understand the true political power. And I should note that Tom Brokaw has a special coming up that looks at exactly that.
The conservative evangelical minority is not the only group that supported this president, and he has to be very careful. You're not going to get any candidate who's going to say, I oppose Roe versus Wade, and I'm going to reverse it. And if you do, I can't imagine a Senate confirming somebody like that. That's what they want. That's not what they're going to be able to get in this Congress in the 21st century. And I think what Senator Schumer said, a centrist and O'Connor-like candidate, is what the country needs, a healing process. And if he goes far out to the right, there will be a battle royal, more than Robert Bork, more than Clarence Thomas. It will be a battle of the 21st century.
Terry Neal, do you agree with that? Are we going to see, if in fact we see a hardline conservative named as the nominee, a real fight from the left, filibusters and all?
I think you will, and I still question the extent to which Democrats can really sort of sustain a real effort against anyone. I mean, the problem with the Democrats over the last few years has been their inability to come together and unite on even the most, you know, obvious sort of things. One of them would be Iraq.
One plus for moderates, certainly, liberals perhaps, Charles, is the idea that the longer this process rolls itself out, the more cases that Sandra Day O'Connor will continue to hear.
Indeed. It's inconceivable that there'll be a nominee in October or November. Congress will be in recess until January. Here's the interesting thought. The president has the power to make a recess appointment. Mm-hmm. And he could make a very powerful statement by appointing a conservative that would serve for a very long time until the Senate would have a time to take it up. And then it would be very hard to try to unravel that. If he makes a recess appointment, which is one of his options, the Democrats will be completely off guard. They will have lost their momentum. They will have no ability to pose it. And the president will be able to at least appease that hard right by saying, here's someone who's on the court now while we wait for a former hearing, which wouldn't happen until January or later, 2006.
Terry, real quickly, if he, in fact, he being the president, makes the, quote, right nomination for the conservative bent slant of his party, does this put him on terra firma where he has been free-falling for some time?
Well, you know, in a lot of ways, I think it does. And here's the reason. The president's support among the middle has eroded. The only place he has support is on the right. And I don't think that he's got a much better chance of regaining some support among his base than among the people that he's lost. And he's got to have at least them back before he can begin working on the middle and pushing some of the rest of his agenda. But I really think what happens next is going to be a real defining moment for what happens in the midterm elections and the 2008 presidential election.
All right. Well, if you like a political battle royale, we may have one coming up. Charles Ogletree, professor of law at Harvard Law School, and Terry Neal is chief political correspondent for WashingtonPost.com. I thank you both for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Ed.
And we note there's complete coverage of the Harriet Myers withdrawal at our website at npr.org.